UFP, the United Federation of Podcasts.
I'm your host, Brandon Shamitella, and joining me as always is Zach Moore, my co-host, to discuss Terminator Salvation.
This is John Connor, and if you're still listening to this, you are the Resistance.
Oh man, I was totally doing my Batman voice.
Very good, Brandon. Yes, we're talking about Terminator Salvation this week.
Here on Franchise Fatigue, the little podcast on the United Federation of Podcast Network that discusses movies, sequels, and remakes. Zach, thanks for joining me. We've got a special guest, don't we?
We do. We have Mr. Lance Lasser. What's up, Lance?
What's up, y'all?
Lance is my best friend, my college roommate, and we have watched many a movie together
yep.
in our time, including Terminator Salvation.
Including this one. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But before we jump into it, what's your take on the Terminator franchise? Like, where do you stand on it, and how do you see the different eras of the movies, you know? You know what I mean?
I like this franchise a lot. Fun fact, Terminator is my mom's favorite movie. So I've seen that one, and obviously two, the most, you know, because I was just watching those back to back. And it's interesting, this franchise, like, it has two excellent, excellent movies, like A-plus movies, right? And then it has... You know, the third one in the trilogy is like, eh. And then Salvation came out and it's like, well, that was better than Terminator 3. Maybe we can do something with this. And then we got Genesis, which was like total crap. So it's just like, you know, it's just that's basically the state of the franchise right there. Like, you got two standouts, a pretty good one, a meh, and really bad.
And yeah, I don't know. I kind of agree with some of what you said. I mean, I don't know. I don't hate Genesis. And I mean, yeah, I don't know. That's good. I don't know. They're good movies. So this is going to be fun. I think this is going to be fun. Now, Zach, you told us that you, like, love this movie.
I do. Sometimes I call it a guilty pleasure, but other times I just call it a pleasure because I think this is a great movie. And I saw this movie three times in the theater.
Are you kidding?
I saw it three times in the theater. I did because I was writing reviews for my college newspaper, wrapping up my college semester. And I got to go see this movie with a press pass for free.
Okay.
I got a t-shirt, a Join the Resistance Terminator Salvation t-shirt that
That's
I still
right.
have.
I got a sock. You gave me a shot glass from that.
I got, oh, you still have that?
All yeah. right,
good. And because when you go, they give you like a press packet and stuff. You know, so I saw it for free once. And then I think you and I saw it together.
Yeah, that's when yeah. I saw it.
And then my dad hadn't seen it yet that summer. And he's like, well, let's go see it. And then I saw it three times in a row. So I really enjoyed it. And it held up on repeat viewings. And it came out on... Home video, I got it. I got the Terminator Anthology Blu-ray set. I thought that, and we'll get into this obviously when we talk about it, but it broke the mold. It was a fresh new direction, and I enjoyed doing something different with the Terminator universe on film. You know, there have been, you know, video games and comics and all sorts of TV shows. Sarah Connor Chronicles mm-hmm. was actually around
yep.
the contemporary of this movie, too. And that's cool, too. But to see a Terminator movie, to see it, I know, right? It was a good show. But to see a Terminator movie where finally it wasn't...
A chase movie?
Yeah, just the time travel. There's a Terminator and a Protector, and they both go back in time. This broke the mold, and it was something different, and I appreciate that.
Excellent. Right on. Well, before we get too in-depth to our discussion on the film, let us jump into some trivia. Zach, I'm guessing you're going to have a little bit of trivia for us to talk about this.
I do. So, directed by... McGee.
My man.
What is up with that?
From Charlie's Angels fame. McGee, you know, he actually went to visit James Cameron while he was working on Avatar, because Avatar came out the same year as this,
yeah.
by the way, to gain insight about the mythology of the first two movies. And Cameron actually recommended Sam Worthington to play the Marcus character. So that's the kind of your James Cameron influence on this film.
He was just hooking his boy up.
Yeah, because what has he done? What has Sam Worthington done outside of Avatar and Terminator?
Oh, you know? Clash and Wrath of the Titans.
Oh, my gosh. Brandon, we got to do Clash of the Titans at some point on this show.
Well, there's three because there's the original and then the remake and then the remake sequel.
Exactly. That's why we have to do it. I think it qualifies for the show, wouldn't you say?
Let's do it.
All right.
I got a question, though. Which did better at the box office, Avatar or Terminator Salvation?
You know, I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'll have to look that up, Brandon.
it's definitely going to be Avatar, if you even, like, hesitated.
I know. There was a lot of different ideas, as there always are with these Terminator movies. Like, nobody has a plan before they make these, apparently, because there were so many different ideas. The original idea was Marcus was going to be a hybrid, like, between human and machine, which he was in the film, but it was going to be more a specific, like, subsection of society. Hybrids that were created by human researchers to improve the human race. Kind of like the Borg, I guess. You know, we're going to enhance ourselves through cybernetics. That was the idea. So he wakes up with amnesia in the future, and then the Dr. Kogan character, who was Helena Bonham Carter's character, she was going to be a bigger role. She was also going to be one of these hybrids. When Skynet wiped out humanity, they were going to let the hybrids live because they thought, oh, well, they're, you know, on the right course because they're part, you know, cybernetic. And then the hybrids were seen as the salvation of the human race, hence the title of the movie, which is, you know, the title of the movie is kind of lost in there somewhere. You know, I mean, there are themes of that kind in the movie, but that is where the word salvation eventually came from in the conception of the movie there.
Well, see, I always interpreted it that because it's like John Connor's era where he's the military commander, like he's the savior, right? So him being alive is the salvation for humanity. That's how I've always interpreted the title, is it's a reference to John Connor.
No, I think it still works. Like,
especially given the ending. Like he says that we're not done yet. There's still stuff to do. But like the tone of the movie at the end doesn't seem like that. It seems like everything's good. Like they did it. So
yeah, we'll talk about that, yeah, too, I know, right? Because that's the point I want to make as it ends. But so anyway, that's where salvation came from. There were a lot of talk about this back and forth. There are some famous alternate endings that were, you know, filmed and scripted and leaked out and everybody freaked out about, some of which being that, well, the main crux of all the alternate endings would be that Marcus Wright would become John Connor in the eyes of the resistance and the world, because John Connor would suffer a fatal injury. And they would put John Connor's face, you know, graft his face onto Marcus Wright, because it was the idea of John Connor and the symbol was more important than who the person was. And I thought that was actually a real interesting concept.
If I could be a symbol,
yeah,
I could be incorruptible.
It's like Batman. A person can be corrupt and destroyed, but a symbol can be everlasting, to quote Christian Bale's Batman from Batman Begins.
Which came out 4 years.
Came out four or five years before this, so... I think that would be actually cool. We can talk about that later. Another kind of side alternate ending to this would be that once John Connor became the Terminator, he would turn evil and kill everyone.
Yeah.
Which would make no sense because if you notice in the movie here, Catherine Brewster, she's pregnant, all right? And that is tying in the continuity for T3 that Arnold tells them in the future, your children become important.
Yes.
So... Yeah, if they were going to kill John Connor, they had to be like, oh, well, how do they have kids? Oh, well, she's already pregnant. So that's actually very smart of them to tie in that continuity. They obviously would not have made her pregnant if that wasn't the idea to kill John and make Marcus John. But, you know, it still works. But then if he's going to kill everyone, then how does that even tie into the future? So had they, I don't know. Like, I think that's a really cool idea. And really plays with your idea of the mythology of the Terminator, but at the same time, it all tracks. And in the movie, Marcus and Kyle Reese are the one that kind of formed the bond, not John Connor and Kyle Reese. Assumably in sequels, they would have formed that bond. But anyway, that's one of those, this alternate ending and alternate story ideas is one of the things that kind of hangs over this movie, I think, when a lot of people talk about it. Because it was actually kind of like a big thing back in the day when this got leaked and people were real upset online. But I don't know. Like, I think we can all agree that him killing everyone off would be bad ending.
Correct.
But what do y'all think about him, like Marcus becoming the John Connor figurehead?
Well, I'll say, so I watched this tonight again with the Maximum Movie Mode on the Blu-ray.
Maximum Movie Mode.
I actually tweeted out Warner Brothers. I'm like, this is actually a really well done Maximum Movie Mode. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done. And so like what they would do at certain points while the movie was playing. So the theatrical cut is 1 hour and 54, but this Maximum Movie Mode is 2 hours and 1 minute.
Okay, and so they actually pause?
They pull out the movie and then it shows the director, McG, and then it shows the screen on one side and some other stuff, and he'll pause it he'll say, okay, stop it here. And then he'll be like talking things back and forth and stuff. So I think that's pretty cool. It's the first time I've actually seen that. But at the end, he does talk about this alternate cut and how that's what the ending he wanted to do. And he thought it was kind of like a braver choice and it would be, but it'd be weird to have this like massive dark ending. Mm-hmm. So, you know, having Marcus, it's almost like, it's not that John Connor becomes the Terminator, it's that the Terminators win.
Yeah.
Right. So, like, well, that's the John case.
Where's the salvation?
Yeah. Makes no sense.
Well, I didn't say it makes sense or anything like that. I don't want that ending. That's terrible.
My problem with it. The description does not fit. So, and I think that would have been a real misstep. So I'm glad that was not the thing.
Well, it's not salvation. It's salvation. So, like, they put it on the wounds. They put salve on their wounds. So,
yeah, by the way, speaking of the title, though, there's no colon or dash in this. It's just Terminator Salvation.
Yeah.
I guess I had always put like a colon there because it's like Star Trek Into Darkness. Nope, mm-hmm. Nope. Just one constant thought. There's no punctuation in between there. But yeah, I think had they stopped halfway and just made him the figurehead, that would have been interesting because then you think about, does the man matter? Is it about the figurehead? The idea of John Connor is more important than the man himself. That's interesting.
Yes, yes.
But then to have him kill everyone undercuts all that. So I think they were halfway there. That would have been a bold choice and got people talking, I think, and as opposed to what we got.
We're kind of going into the discussion of the film, but yeah, like, because they even had that Christ symbology of Marcus,
yes.
Right, when he was hanging there, right? So yep. He's the savior at the end.
Well, when he was executed, you know, on the table and then also hanging there. So totally. So anyway, lots of story opportunities here, but it didn't ruin the movie, by not doing that, I think. Which other Terminator movies were perhaps ruined by making those choices. Speaking of spoilers and whatnot, we talked about this with Terminator 2. The tradition of Terminator movies spoiling themselves in the trailers is back because clearly when you watch this movie, it's supposed to be a surprise that Marcus is a Terminator. Like, you know something's up with him, but you don't know, like, blatantly, because it's a reveal for him and the other characters. And then, like, I think, like, the first trailer, or the second, not the teaser, but the trailer was, like, the scene where it's revealed he's a Terminator.
Yep.
The movie would have played better. Like, that would have been a really cool reveal. Like, you would have known something was off about him. But again, shame on you, whoever edits these Terminator trailers, for spoiling that. Like, what do you guys think about that?
No, I agree. It's just like, I mean, there's so few things that could be, like, a surprise at the movie theater nowadays. And it's like, that would have been really cool. Now, granted, that's kind of an obvious thing to kind of figure out. Right, especially since they were already doing this whole movie is a, you know, bold new direction with everything, right? So that's something that you can kind of logically see them going for. But it would have been nice to like see that in the theaters and not the trailer for like some other thing. It would have been nice to see it like, oh, as you're sitting watching the movie, it's like, oh, cool, well done, or that's what I thought this whole time. Like, we didn't get that moment. It's like, oh yeah, we knew this already.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing about trailers is it's like, what do you show? And I think this movie would be a hard movie to make a trailer for. So, yeah, I don't know that I really blame them for that, but it would have been nice to have that reveal. Because even watching now, it's like, I haven't seen it in a long time, and I'm like, well, he's a Terminator, and I don't know, I haven't seen the trailer in forever, right? So, he's a machine. Like, I mean, like, I could figure that out because he signs his body over to Cyberdyne, and it's like, okay, well, I don't know. So, to me, it's not like it's a well-kept secret. Like even if they didn't say it, Terminator fans would have probably figured it out pretty damn quick.
Fair enough.
Right? Because he was being killed, and then he's alive 10 years later. Or 15 years later, I guess it is, right?
Yes, in the far future of 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the far future of 2018. I can't wait to get there.
Oh, boy. So Stan Winston, who's a special effects master who was behind all of the Terminator designs of the whole franchise, he actually passed away during the production of this film. So this was the last film he ever worked on. The film was actually dedicated to him at the end. And he also makes a brief cameo as a prisoner on board the Harvester after they all get taken at the gas station. So R.I.P. Stan Winston, just an incredible special effects guy behind the Terminator, Jurassic Park, you know, just his legacy of special effects is well known and well documented in Hollywood. As far as returning cast members from previous Terminator movies, Schwarzenegger was a governor of California at this time.
Governator,
yes. He declined the cameo in the film because he thought that a brief appearance would be cheating the audience, as well as the fact that, you know, he had other responsibilities. He technically could have filmed it on a weekend or something, but I love the CGI honorable moment in here. We'll put a pin in that and talk about it when we start talking about the movie. So I like that although Arnold wasn't in it, they found a way to incorporate him in a clever way. Sarah Connor. We hear her audio tape she recorded for John. He's listening to them throughout the movie. Some of that is the same dialogue from the first Terminator, some of it is new dialogue, but all of it is new recordings that Linda Hamilton did as an uncredited cameo. So I thought that was really cool, really kind of connective tissue, again, something that was missing from Terminator 3, because the tapes was a big deal. She was recording them the first one. In the deleted scene, Terminator 2, we saw that John had them, and I guess he had them in that nuclear bunker at the end.
I guess
so. So it's Terminator 3, so it's Survivor Judgment Day. So that's really cool for her to come back for that.
Yeah, so I got a question on that. So while I'm watching it, and maybe this is only the kind of thing that you notice upon multiple rewatches, but it's like tape 28 she's talking about, and that's the first time she mentions his dad. She's like, I don't even know if I should tell you about Kyle. About sending your father back, would that affect your... It's like 28 tapes. Like these tapes, let's say these tapes are 60 minutes long, right? She's talked for like 28 hours, and she's just getting to Kyle Reese.
Man, I want to make a like a women talking joke somewhere in there, but I don't think I should, so we're just going to keep moving on. You know how they talk, but I don't know. It's...
What the hell did she talk about for 28 hours?
Have you talked to a woman on the phone before, all right? It's possible. But yeah, I get your point. Brandon. I mean, it was something she was saving to eventually talk about because it was difficult, so that's how I justify it, but that's a great point. I never thought about that before. So I happen to rewatch these movies too many times to start noticing these things. Talking about Marcus Wright, Josh Brolin was actually considered and asked to play Marcus Wright, but he turned it down.
And as the Goonies?
Yes, the guy from the Goonies. Yes, yeah. Jonah Hex... Cable from Deadpool and Thanos from the MCU is who we're talking about. Man, the guy from
I
the
love
Goonies.
The Goonies so much.
But ultimately, McGee with the Sam Worthington based off James Cameron's recommendation. Now, John Connor recast yet again here. Christian Bale
doing his Batman voice the entire time.
Yep.
And Nick Stahl was interested in returning, but he was told by the people behind the film at the time that John Connor was going to be older, like 50-ish, by the for Terminator 4, and that he would not be needed for the next movie. But I don't know if they just didn't want him back, if that changed. I like Christian Bale, right? I like him as an actor. He's my third favorite Batman after Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck, but that's another conversation. But he's a great charismatic guy to have here, although, again, the connective tissue between these movies gets lost by all this recasting. And Brandon, I know you weren't the biggest fan of Nick Stahl, but would you have liked to see him back just for continuity's sake? Or?
Oh, that's a tough call because Christian Bale is just terrible in this movie.
Really? Like, you think
so?
Yeah, man. The only thing I don't like, this is jumping into the conversation, the only thing I don't like about this movie is Christian Bale as John Connor. I do not think he was an appropriate casting choice, and I do not think his Batman Bruce Wayne voice does this movie any justice at all. And I don't know, he doesn't work for me. I'm glad that John Connor is not the primary focus of this movie, because if Christian Bale wasn't in this, I would probably give this movie 5 stars, but wow. I knock a whole star off for Christian Bale. So, but Nick Stahl, I don't know that I'd want Nick Stahl back because I didn't like Nick Stahl either. So I don't
know. Edward Furlong, get your life together. No we want joke. You back. It's interesting you bring that up, though, because the reason I brought up Marcus and then John Connor was because initially Christian Bale was approached to play the Marcus character, and John Connor was going to show up at the end of the movie. But when they got Christian Bale on board, he's like, hey, I'm going to play John Connor because that's the one everybody knows. And yeah. So they're like, all right, well, let's expand that role. They move some stuff around. So I think that's why you kind of have it's kind of like the problem that episode one, The Phantom Menace has, like, who is the protagonist of this movie, right? Because you got John Connor over here. You got Marcus Wright over here. You don't know. Mm-hmm. Originally, they were going to be the same person at the end. So it's all very complicated. But yeah, to your point there, Brandon, yeah, I mean, he was not going to be John Connor. They thought for him as the Marcus Wright character. Would you have liked him better as Marcus Wright, perhaps?
I probably would have.
It kind of fits the Christian Bale mold of being like not knowing what he is and then like finding out he's a robot later, in a killing machine. That kind of fits like the stuff that he is into.
Sounds perfect for him. And I just want to say that not knowing the main character is not the only problem with The Phantom Menace.
Well, yes, but that... It's a symptom of those kinds of movies, for sure. So, Helena Bonham Carter, she actually replaced Tilda Swinton. Her character was based off a character called Serena Burns from the T2 Infiltrator novels by S.M. Stirling. Now, this is a series of books that take place after Terminator 2, they pick up everything, ignoring, well, actually it was before Terminator 3, before anything else, so that was like, as if there were going to be no more Terminator movies. This is a series of books, and there's a character that in there that looks like Arnold Schwarzenegger, is like the human model for the T-100. And again, all these side media, like books and comics and all these things with Terminator, interesting that they just pulled a name out to assign to this character. Nothing else from that character, as I understand it, but just a name. So, and as I understand, that's a pretty interesting book series. So, if people are Terminator fans, go check out the T2 Infiltrator series there. And also, interesting enough that Helena Bonham Carter, she only has 5 minutes of screen time in this movie, but she gets like prominent billing.
I liked her casting in her role. Like, I thought she was really good. I loved when she came back at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really creative to bring her back. And I thought her voice, I know they kind of like changed it a little bit, but I thought her voice worked well as this computer.
The voice of Skynet, basically. The avatar of Skynet. Avatar. That was unintentional.
It was a nice wraparound. I liked it.
Now, Terry Crews.
My man.
All right. Terry Crews was cast in the film as Common's brother, because when John Connor comes back to his base, Common comes up to him. He's like, "My brother." He's like, "No, I didn't make it." And we see his corpse sitting there.
No, he didn't make it.
We see him when John comes out of the hole there. We see that dead body there. That's Terry Crews. And
it's very, very Matrix like with the two of them. Like,
like Link and
Tank.
Tank and Link.
Yeah. I think that's what
I think
those are.
I think about that.
Yeah. That's kind of the vibe that I got with those two. I was just like, I've seen this before.
And Lance, for all the listeners, who is Terry Crews and why is he famous?
Well, he's a football player, but he was an Old Spice guy, and he has a dancing pecs.
See, he is in incredible shape.
He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine at the moment.
So, if you saw him, you might recognize him. Well, there was going to be, and these are deleted scenes of more action, above ground during that battle, and he would have been featured in that, but that was all cut. But he did cameo as a dead body.
Yeah.
Now the gas station, Brandon, the one I brought up in the last movie, this is allegedly the same gas station from the last three movies, the petrol station that they show up to and get kidnapped from. It's the same one from Terminator 1 where Sarah records the tape, gets the picture taken, the one where T2 where they go reset the chip, the one from T3 where he tells the guy to talk to the hand.
Uh-huh.
And of course, here in Terminator 4 where it's just...
But now it's abandoned. A 7-Eleven.
But do you
when
seen...
did it go from an AM/PM to a 7-Eleven after the apocalypse?
That's a good point.
Somebody's
the timeline changed a little bit.
No, Judgment Day happened on that day.
That's a good point. This is a direct sequel to Terminator to Terminator 3. So I didn't think about that, Brandon. So perhaps this trivia is perhaps it's a fan theory that got out of control, but it's my understanding this is supposed to be the same gas station.
But it's a 7-Eleven.
That's misinformation provided by Skynet.
Yeah, exactly.
So. Unless this goes with my theory of the spiraling, the timeline's just spiraling.
That's a terrible theory,
bit off,
so no,
every
I clearly
time.
Cannot
That's
go with that.
It's a great theory. Lance, I'm looking for a new co-host for Fantastique.
Now, this was intended to be the first of a new Terminator trilogy about the future war.
Of course it was.
McGee was going to direct them all, but there was a mixed reception critically, and it allegedly underperformed financially, which I think, like, the standards for movies these days and how much money they have to make is ridiculous. So this movie cost $200 million.
Right? That's a lot of money.
And it made a worldwide gross of $371 million. So it didn't quite double its budget. That's usually the goal from these movies. So because of that, they decided to not carry on with this trilogy. Now, they do this every single time with Terminator movies now. There was supposed to be a trilogy coming off T3. There was supposed to be a trilogy coming off Terminator Salvation. There was supposed to be a trilogy coming off Terminator Genesis.
Mm-hmm.
And there's allegedly a trilogy coming from Terminator Dark Fate. I wish they would just take these, one movie at a time, stop planning this stuff out, at least plan it behind the scenes, obviously, but don't tell everybody it's the first of a trilogy, because that just looks embarrassing.
Yeah, set you up for failure. It's not set you up for success when you do that.
Yeah. See, I guessed it on a friend's podcast, and we talked about the Planet of the Apes trilogy, and that is a series of films that did it right, because the new Planet of the Apes trilogy, like, they made each movie as good as they possibly could, right? Like, so they originally wanted to do a trilogy, but it's like they didn't focus on that. They focused on the one story that they had in front of them, and, spoilers for whenever we get to that, but that's probably like the greatest trilogy made in like a really, really long time.
Last bit of trivia about this. There is an director's cut of this film that's 3 minutes longer. You know, it's funny. We talk about all these alternate scenes, deleted stuff. None of this is in the director's cut. I was a little bit disappointed.
Is Rogue in it?
No, it's not the Rogue cut from X-Men. That's its own conversation. But this is called the director's cut. It's about 3 minutes longer. Very minor changes. A little more violence. You see Moon Bloodgood naked, but from far away. You know, a little more of that going on. If you were unfamiliar with this film and like watched both cuts like 10 years apart, you would not be able to tell any of the differences. So,
man, Zach, I watched these movies like 2 days apart, and I couldn't tell the difference between the two movies. So I watched it three times. So, like, right? So I watched the theatrical cut, and then I watched the director's cut, and then tonight I watched the Maximum Movie Mode, and, like, I don't know. I couldn't tell the difference between the two at all. So,
I mean, I will always, as usual with these, I would always default to the director's cut or extended cut, because I like seeing as much there is possible, unless it somehow ruins or undercuts the movie. I don't feel like anything ruins the movie here. It's so negligible. And the reason these two cuts exist is they cut out a little bit here and there to get a PG-13 rating, because this is the first Terminator movie not to be rated R. But The Dark Knight, shocking, the Dark Knight influences movie, had come out a year before, and it was PG-13, and they felt, well, that didn't feel compromised in any way, so let's go ahead and make this one PG-13. But that's the stigma with this movie, too. A lot of people are like, why are you making Terminator PG-13? I'm not a big deal. I mean, I don't think it suffers either way, but that was the logic of why there's an R cut and a PG-13 cut.
See, let's talk about that for a second, because T3, when I watch it, I'm surprised that that's an R.
The profanity?
T3, it's not too violent. Maybe it's more to do language. But I, in my opinion, they should have pulled T3 back to a PG-13, because it almost was a PG-13.
Well, I think the main, if there's one thing from T3 that sticks out, it's when the TX punches through the guy's chest and drives the car.
Right.
Other than that, though, and the profanity, literally everything else in that movie, it's very clean, very clean violence.
It is, Like, they don't show... they don't show, like, when she shoots the guy at the drive-thru the brother at the house. So, yeah. Anywho, cool. Right on. Good job with the trivia. I really appreciate that, Zach. That's really good. Let us jump into our discussion. I don't know if you want to add any more to my discussion about my dislike of Christian Bale, but that's really the only negative that I have for this is him in this role. He just does not work for me at all.
I get it's like the mid-2000s, and he's at peak Batman, right? And there he's doing the voice, right? I think it works better. It works fine for John Connor. Like, I don't know. Like, I enjoyed him as the character. Like, I think his introduction is amazing, right? Like, he comes down in this helicopter and lands on Terminator. Like, it's his pan up. He shoots the Terminator, and then, like, pans up, and it's John Connor. Like, this is the John Connor wanted to see.
Well, that head gets crushed just like at the end of the first one, you know? So it's like immediately we have this callback, and we have this connective tissue on screen of the beginning of this franchise and to where we are now. And it's just cool.
Now, for Christian Bale, though, I will say that there are moments where he just starts yelling, which is amusing.
Here's the thing. Okay, so we have to talk about this. His infamous like rant against the lighting guy during the production of this movie. When I think of Terminator Salvation, that's the first thing I think of is Christian Bale going da 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 da, and oh, good for you.
I don't know this.
It's just funny.
Have you never heard this, Brandon?
No, what is this?
Are you serious? Oh my goodness gracious. All right. Help. Everybody stop. All right, Brandon, we just listened to it. What do you think?
I like Christian Bale even less now. Okay, the only other time I remember something like this, have you seen the bonus features for The Rock?
No.
So I got the Criterion Edition for The Rock, and there's a behind-the-scenes thing with Ed Harris that you guys need to find out, where he's trying to do some lines and stuff, and there's like this whole long thing, and they're calling it bloopers. It is the most uncomfortable couple of minutes like I've ever sat watching a movie. There's a scene where he's talking on the phone, and he's screwing up his lines, and he's yelling at people off the set and stuff. And he takes this receiver phone and he like just starts smashing it down at Harris. And it reminds me of that, honestly. And like, I'm like, that's not cool, man.
So right after this movie, or actually during this movie, I was interning at a TV station where I actually got my first job out of college, and I worked there for several years. And, you know, being in production, we would quote this to each other all the time. You're like, da 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 da. Why are you walking right through? You're a nice guy. You're a nice guy. But that's not going to cut it. You're not effing around on set.
We quote this to each other also.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like, this is like just in my circle of friends, this is such an iconic thing to say. Because it's insane. He's lost his mind. So I feel like, honestly, like, you talk about the mixed critical and commercial reception of this movie. This was released before the movie. This snuck out. So he had this freak out on set against the lighting guy, because he was doing an intense scene. I'm pretty sure it's the scene when he's convincing everyone not to go on the attack, just from what he's talking about. And he's so locked in the scene. And then apparently this lighting guy wanders into the scene to adjust the light in the middle of Christian Bale's, you know, monologue there. And that's why he freaks out, because he's on so high. He's like, you know, I guess kind of a method actor. He has to get hyped up for it.
Funny thing is, like, he's like in character for part of this.
Yeah.
And so that's also the other thing that makes it really, really funny. It's just incredible.
And the part to me is like, he cools down and he gets mad again.
Yeah.
But anyway, what happened here, obviously, when they film movies, like, the audio guy kept rolling and someone released this.
Yes.
And I mean, Christian Bale and the lighting guy have since made up, but Bale still has a problem with the fact it was released, because it kind of violates the trust of, you know, of the set. And you know, no, he has a point. Like, you know, you can't just be releasing this
stuff.
You
want that stuff to stay, like, in-house.
But at the same time, it's a bad look for Christian Bale. And it's like, dude, like, it's so inappropriate and such an insane overreaction to something is why it's so funny. But anyway, yeah, I'm glad we had to talk about that at some point.
Yeah, it
and
had
so,
to get out.
Since you were led off the conversation with how you didn't like Christian Bale in this movie. But no, this put a cloud over the movie to some extent, I think, because this was, like I was saying, it was released before the movie came out. It leaked, and people were like, Mike, what's going on with the set of Terminator Salvation? You know,
and
so,
this was in the public consciousness. People knew about this. Yeah. This was something that people made fun of.
I never heard of this ever.
No, really. If the machines come and take us all over and there's a nuclear war, and there's only one thing remembered about this movie from that, it would
be
his rant. So it's amazing. It's 10 years later, I still laugh.
Yeah, it's
about
still
it,
funny.
So
I can't believe this has completely slipped me by. I've never heard of this. This is bizarre.
So all that to say, you put that aside, right? But it's always in the back of your mind when you see it.
Yeah.
So whenever there's like a scene where it's like, what are you? Like when he's yelling at people, you just, is this the scene where he freaked out? Like, I don't know.
Well, because when we went to go
why
see
are you
it,
walking up behind Bryce?
In the middle of the scene. Like, we were like trying to figure out like which scene it was, like while we're watching this. And it wasn't just us. Lots of people did this.
So anyway, there you have it. There's the Christian Bale rant. Yeah, so that's its own universe unto itself. So let's move on back to the movie.
Let's talk about the good stuff. Okay, I love the look of this movie. So you had kind of said something on it, and I'm not a major film connoisseur, right? Like, I took a semester of film classes at my university. But Terminator 3 has a very interesting look.
If by interesting you mean cheap, I would agree with you.
I wouldn't say cheap, but it kind of feels like a lot of it's done on a set. Like the scene when the cactus goes on fire when Arnold shows up. Like, to me, I don't know, there's something interesting about the way that it looks, and I like it for that movie. But this has a very realistic feel to it. Mm-hmm. You know, we get this desaturated color, but he's done a lot of practical effects in this movie. Like, a lot of the explosions were all done with gas. Like, they blew up a bunch of gasoline and stuff like this and like made massive explosions. The one where it's like the long line when Sam Worthington's character is going away with the big
machine. Go full apocalypse now.
Yeah. Yeah, like those are like real flames. And I love the look of it. And this is definitely the best special effects in the franchise so far. And there are a couple of really great action scenes in this that stand head and shoulders above the previous films. you know? Mm-hmm. So I really love a lot of stuff in this movie. So I don't know if you want to talk a little bit about the look. That's kind of where I started. But what do you guys think of the look, this desaturated color and this realistic feel that they're going for?
Well, I think the only, and I like it, like, in and of itself, but I think the only thing against it is, like, the generic future wasteland look you see in, like, Mad Max or The Road or Book of Eli, you know, movies like this where it's, like, it was, the end of the world.
It looks a lot like Book of Eli.
Like, to me, like, you know, though it was, like, you know, I guess, kind of a real take on, like, this dope, on a dystopian type of future, like, it was just kind of bland, you know, and, like, it's in... It kind of was lacking something for me. And if you think back to, like, the Universal Studios, like, experience for Terminator. Like
Terminator 2, 3, Battle Across Time.
So, like, that, like, you know, when you see that the future, like, you know, in the battles and stuff like that, that's kind of what I was thinking in my mind. And, you know, you get this and it's just like, oh, this is kind of like, you know, in, like, what they fit this at? New Mexico? Like,
well, the thing is, and that's a common criticism, especially by hardcore Terminator fans. But this is, remember, this is 2018. All those future scenes we've seen before are 2029. So they have 11 years to get to that. And had they had the trilogy, I feel like they would have evolved into that because they're still using helicopters and guns and, you know, like, not lasers and purple lasers and all that stuff. Although there is an interesting line here, like, in the first Terminator, Kyle Reese is like, we only go out at night.
Yeah, that's another thing.
And then in this one, they're like, we don't go out at night. They see better than this.
Yeah.
There's a mismatch of, like, what the future is, but in that 11-year gap that there would be to the future that we've seen before, you can kind of fill in the blanks in your head. But more importantly, I just think it's a very cinematic looking film. You know, I love the one take or fake one take shots. We get a lot of the action sequences. There's no music, so you're kind of immersed in the moment. There's
for that stuff, yeah. I do appreciate that.
You know, so I really like that approach, and it is very different than what we got before, but it works here.
That helicopter crash sequence at the beginning? Oh, man, that's bonkers.
Yeah,
that's
because
awesome.
You see him get in the... I remember that in the theater. I'm like, that's impressive. Mick G, man, this guy's going places. You stay with him, you see it crash, he lands. Like, it's all very well done. And yeah, I think there's a great meld of the practical and the CGI here. Definitely, Brandon, because we haven't seen this scale of this war before. And so it's different than what we saw before. But it's a different time period, too. Let's not forget that. And that is not a problem for me in this film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like that helicopter sequence, they were talking about it in the Maximum Movie Mode, where that's actually stitched together from, like, five different takes. Mm. And they've kind of, like, seamlessly edited it to make it look like it's one shot. So, which blew me away because I thought it was one shot. I didn't think it was all real. Like, I thought there was some blue screen and stuff, which there was. But I was really surprised to find out that it was like five scenes, like five takes stitched together in order to blend those special effects.
Yeah. So as far as the other characters go, I mean, we talked about John Connor. We can talk about Marcus Wright, the other protagonist. Like, you know, Sam Worthington, right? We make fun of him. You know, I think he's good in this. I do.
He is.
There's one scene in the reveal scene where he's a Terminator, though. For some reason, he loses his accent and he just... defaults back to speaking with an Australian accent.
Yeah.
He's like, if I wanted to kill him, I would have done it in L.A. You know, when he's talking about Kyle Reese. Did you notice this?
A little bit, yeah.
I didn't.
But again, like, you could say the same thing for Bale. You know.
That's Bale, yeah. Bale's always struggling to not have his British accent as well. But no, all that aside, like, Sam Worthington, I think he's really effective. Like, especially in the fight scene where all those guys are attacking him and Moon Bloodgood. Mm-hmm. And, like, the way he fights the guys, it's very much like Arnold, very, like, mechanical, and he does the head turn, the Arnold head turn as the Terminator very well, like, and I don't know, I buy him as this character. He has kind of, his backstory is like, it's kind of like this vague Tom Paris from Voyager backstory, like, some people died, we're not going to tell you what happened because he's kind of the hero, and we don't want you to not like him.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, his brother and a couple of cops died, we don't know what he did. But he got executed for it, so that's been pretty bad.
So you could you know, connect some dots.
Yeah, but I think it's a good protagonist, and I think that was the right idea when they conceived the movie. Like, this guy's going to be our protagonist. He's going to be our way into this story. And then, of course, when Bale came in with John Connor, that all kind of changed. But I liked him. I liked his relationship with Kyle Reese as well. So,
So I've got watching this, like, this is one of those weird fan theory things, right? I think that Skynet set him up to end up in this position, right? Because of the way that they planned the infiltration. So this goes into my theory of the spiraling out of control timeline, that they sent another Terminator back in time to 2003 because that's when Judgment Day happened. So after the Terminatrix from T3, they sent somebody else back in time to set this thing up, right? Because that was also in 2003. So they, after Terminatrix failed, they're like, okay, we're on to our next mission now because that one didn't work. Let's send somebody back in time. We'll set this guy up, send him to jail, give him the death penalty, get him to sign over his body to Skynet so that we can, to Cyberdyne, so that we can turn him into a Terminator later on. It's a little bit more complex of a plan. There might be a couple of holes in my theory there, but, I don't know. That's just that's how necessary. I add to it. Because again, this spiraling out of control timeline, I like that theory. I know you don't like... You don't like it, but I mean, to me, it works, and it makes sense for why even like the technology is changing and why the Terminators get better every time.
Well, I mean, that is more the logic of what the Sarah Connor Chronicles did. It's like kind of it's become a time war with all these different things. And yeah, we are now in that phase of like because Judgment Day's changed the date, the whole time loops, that's out the window now that the rules of time travel have changed. There's nothing to say that didn't happen, Brandon, but I did like how they just made it look Cyberdyne systems here. You know, remember this is 2003 and Terminator 3 was in 2004. So there was a year for the government to buy Cyberdyne. No, it was set in 2004. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that gives the time for like this Cyberdyne research systems to be look that up while I talk here.
I am definitely doing that.
But that gives time because Helena Bonham Carter's character died and like the government like bought that research. And I like the continuity of the Cyberdyne logo.
Yeah.
You see it in the paper. Also, you see it in the Cyberdyne factory in San Francisco. Like when they're sneaking around, like it's very subtle, but it's on the walls and on the keypads. I mean, that's really cool. Cause you think to yourself, and people criticize the movie for this, right? Why would Skynet have like an office building or something? Right. Yeah. But no, like this is an old Cyberdyne building that they just work out of now. Like, why do they have chairs and stuff is a little, I'm not going to defend that. But I think that there was this program they were doing, prototype Terminator hybrids, you know, and as we see when they go in there, you actually see Marcus.
Yeah.
It's a blink and you miss it there, but when Connor and all his men go down there, they're shining the light around, you see Marcus, like, laying on a slab, and I guess after this, he gets activated, right, he comes out. Gotta have your naked person show up not knowing what's going on in Terminator. They got that going on. But that's the way I saw it. And the Skynet plot here is a little like, you know, they could have killed Kyle Reese or John
anytime.
Connor anytime. That is a problem. That's what keeps this from being like a 5-star for me.
Like they literally capture Kyle Reese and put him like in a detention facility. Like it's like you could have just offed him. Like I don't understand.
Like in the whole point, and I agree with you, Brandon. I like Helena Bonham Carter, like her as Skynet, like. She it's like a Borg queen almost, like kind of like a robotic interaction. Although why Skynet would like give Marcus all this exposition at the end, it's kind of weird to me.
Got a monologue.
Yeah, that is a symptom of films where they got to give exposition because they're like, no, actually, what you've done was the plan the whole time because they got to get in there that this beam signal thing was a fake out,
right?
It was a way for them to get to the submarine to send off a signal so they can know where it is.
Did you look up when Judgment Day happened?
Maybe.
Sounds like I was right.
The movie came out in 2003. That's why I had the date.
Tried to
I
just
can
move
see
on
that
past
wrong.
That. Well played. You know, you mentioned the submarine. I thought that was kind of cool that the Resistance Command was on a submarine.
Oh, yeah, okay, before we get to the submarine, okay, you're holding this from being a 5-star movie because they could have killed Kyle Reese at any time. They could have gone back to 1887 and killed Sarah Connor's grandmother.
Well, that's like, the problem with the time travel being like a thing they can always do. The first two movies, it was always a last-ditch thing, and that's what solved that problem. Like, well, the machines were going to get destroyed. They sent back the T-800 and T-1000, so we sent back our two guys, and we're going to let the past play out. That's why it worked. When you introduce this time war, you're absolutely right. That becomes a huge plot hole. Like, then you got to keep always sending people back and
to different
it's like
times,
mutually
to prevent
assured
something.
Time travel destruction.
Right.
So anyway,
it's like Star Trek: First Contact. Why did the Borg travel to Earth to go back in time when they could have gone back in time in the Delta Quadrant and then flown to Earth with no resistance? Well,
because,
right?
I put on my Star Trek fanboy hat and defend that. That was not always the plan. That was a last ditch plan. Their plan was not time travel's like. all right, we have this thing, we have this button we can push, it's not a sure thing. So being a computer, you know, the Borg, right, you would logically look like, all right, we think we can get to Earth and assimilate it, but if we can't, we'll hit the panic button and time travel. So there. Just close that plot hole for you. Close that temporal wake for you about Star Trek.
You're trying to put, no, that does not work for me. You're trying to put logic to the Borg, and you can't do that.
So anyway, anything else you want to say about Marcus?
No.
Before we get to the submarine. Yeah. What's the deal with him and Moon Bloodgood?
Like, she likes him.
Like, that was interesting, I thought. Like, she kind of, I mean, he saved her life and stuff, but, you know, that was an interesting kind of wrinkle to throw into things.
Yeah, you know, there was one of the weirdest pop-ups on this Maximum Movie Mode. Like, I don't know who this woman was. I can't remember her name. But she was like, she was like a person who worked on the movie. I don't know if she was like a producer or like a casting director or something like this. But they were talking about Moon and her character. And they're like, you know, we wanted to hire this person who's like pretty and, you know, she's not too pretty, because then you wouldn't believe that she'd be a pilot. But, you know, she's pretty enough, right, that, you know, everybody wants to be her friend and the men want to have sex with her.
Dang.
Thank you for that insight, Maximum Movie Mode, right?
Well, and I mean, I'm like, yeah. What?
Well, I mean, you have those guys that kind of come in and, you know, the sleazy, like, you always get that in the apocalyptic world. Like, one of those guys, his last name is Papa John. All right, literally, that's his last name. He's one of the. He's like the main guy who's going to come after an assault. Williams, which is Moon Bloodgood's character's name, and he was actually an EMT in Terminator 3. He's the guy who tries to pick up Arnold's. Like, oh, this guy weighs a ton, right? Yeah. Also, he's the same guy who killed Uncle Ben in the Spider-Man trilogy. So this guy he's just a bit actor working his way in lots of movies.
Who's
good
Uncle
for him.
Ben?
Anyway, this is the MCU joke that Lance is making about how Michael Mann's on the MCU. But moving on. So that was cool. Also, when she let him go, right? And then they capture her again, and John Connor's like, why'd you do it? And she's like, I saw a man, not a machine. And like, you cut to John, he like thinks about it, and he's like, all right, let her go. And I think to myself, like, oh, that's because he had the same, you know, he felt that way about the T-800 in Terminator 2. Like, he had that personal connection, which will end up killing him in the future, according to Terminator 3. So that's the way I see it. I read into it that way.
And that's what I thought was happening here. I thought John Connor was going to die at the end of this, because they said in T3, right, they picked him for the... Like, it's just... They picked the T-800 for his nostalgic value. But it's like, here, that's fulfilling the timeline if the T-800 killed him in this movie,
but
right?
But it's too soon, though. It's
whatever.
11 years of the time war, right?
The timeline spiraling out of control.
All right. Well, let's talk about it. We are going to get to the submarine and those guys in a minute, but the T-800 in this, right? I thought that was a very smart, clever, creative way. I remember in the theater, I was like, because as we understood it, Arnold was not going to be in this, you know, and we're like, all right. But then they're like, I had a feeling like, well, who's he going to find in here? What's going on here? And then you see the room like, oh, it's going to be Arnold. And they for the first time in the movie, they play that term.
Yeah,
he comes out. Yeah. I'm like, and it's CGI young Arnold. It was so cool. And I know the CGI is not perfect. I know that.
But that's kind of what makes it lovable, though. You know, it's like, you know what? They knew that that's what we wanted, and they just went and did it anyway.
But and also, he's a synthetic person,
correct?
So it's okay. He doesn't look perfect, like Tron Legacy being in a computer and young Jeff Bridges. Like, that's the way I justify this mid-2000s CGI. Yeah. So what did you think of them incorporating Arnold in this way, Brandon?
It completely took me by surprise in the theater. Mm-hmm. I had no clue it was going to happen, and I loved it.
At least
like,
they didn't put that in the trailer.
No, no joke.
Yeah, good thing they didn't show that in the trailer. It totally took me surprise. It was totally. To me, it was one of those little fan service things, but it was done right.
Yes.
You know, because we didn't. The whole movie, they're talking about the T-800 being built. And, you know, I loved how the T-600s look in this movie. Mm-hmm. I think they did a really good job of it.
And you can see the rubber skin on them, like Kyle Reese had said in the other movie.
It.
So smart.
Yeah, it's not what I pictured, but it works just fine. Right? Like, I didn't picture them being bigger. But again, it makes sense that they would be a little bit bigger because they're like an earlier generation, right? Mm-hmm. But seeing Arnold, even if it's CGI, yes, it doesn't look that great. And honestly, it really tugs at the heartstrings properly as a fan of the franchise for me.
Yeah.
Wonderful. And I'm so glad that they did it.
Yeah.
I agree.
And another bit of trivia about that. They didn't know if Arnold was going to like sign on letting him use his likeness yet. So they actually they had made the sequence two different ways where he gets his face shot off like immediately, so you never even really see it. But Arnold signed off on it. And it was cool. Also, so what they did was they actually used scans of him from the original Terminator for his face. So, and hey, he has the hair that the Terminator should have. Remember, yeah. I brought this up about like he has the kind of the mop top hair, if you will. Mm-hmm. And in Terminator 2, he has a buzz cut for some reason, like he does. But anyway, great attention to detail there on the continuity, how he should look. And then you think to yourself, oh, well, what's the end going to be? Well, it's the T-800 versus Marcus. And so that was a cool kind of boss battle at the end that reminded you of, you know, much, much, much better than T3, which was in some respects, we didn't really get into it, but embarrassing, I think, with like, oh, she's going to grab his crotch and stuff like that. I did not like that fight.
Yeah.
No, it was nice to see Marcus and him battling again, because Marcus is like he's like Arnold in T2 and T3, and he's like Kyle Reese in T1. Yeah, he didn't go back in time. He went forward in time, right, anyway, in this movie. But he's the protector of them in this movie. So it's great that we've got the T-800 and him battling it out right at the end. It works really, really well.
And to see the T-800 like moving around like that, like and being smart too, like it hides in the assembly line of the other one. So it was a really cool, effective in fight.
I love that part. So. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm,
But let's talk about the people in the submarine. So
man, Michael Ironside,
one of Lance's favorite character actors, Michael Ironside.
I love this guy.
He's the commander of the resistance at this point. And so I don't know why this line stuck with us. What say it, Lance?
Which one?
Commence
the bombing of Skynet.
Like, we would quote ourselves this line. I don't know why. It was just like, oh my God, is that Michael Ironside? I didn't expect to see him in the movie. So when my dad saw it, he turned to me, he's like, is that Jack Nicholson? Because Michael Ironside is kind of aged into Jack Nicholson, yes. Kind of, right? Just that sneer. I don't know. He's a perfect for a tough, like, gruff military guy. I mean, Starship Troopers. He plays General Sam Lane, Lois Lane's dad on Smallville.
He's
so,
in X-Men First Class.
Yes. So, like this guy, he's a character actor. He's carved out a niche for himself, a nice niche for himself. Also, he co-starred with Arnold in Total Recall.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, anyway, love seeing him pop up in this. So.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I thought the guys who were in the submarine were fine. I mean, like, I'm not that big of a Michael Ironside fan. Like, sure, he's fine. I don't dislike him, but I mean, I'm not going to be like, oh, the new Michael Ironside film's out. I'm going to go rush and see that.
Brandon, I don't think there are any quote Michael Ironside.
That's correct.
So,
but I thought it was weird that the way he was interacting with Connor, like the whole sequence, because he's like yelling at him. And I tweeted this out too. I'm like, can we please stop with the garbage line, the terrible, terrible, terrible dialogue of, this is need to know information. Well, I need to know. Oh, I hate that line. That is so cheesy.
Well, see, I liked how he was busting his balls, and I liked how he just did not buy into John Connor's savior of the world type of thing. He's like, this guy's an old school, gruff military dude, and like doesn't really. He wants John Connor to fall in line, doesn't like him breaking his rules, doesn't like him going off and doing whatever he wants. He wants people to fall in line and do and follow orders. And so I kind of like that dynamic, because John Connor really hasn't reached, like, he has like this mythical status, right? But he still has to follow the chain of command at this point, which is kind of interesting. It's an interesting position to be in, because up until this point, like, it was like, oh, John Connor, this great military commander, leader of the resistance, you know, leader of the free of the rest of the free folk and the free world. But we didn't know that, like, he also had a boss, basically. And so that's an interesting position to have him in for a little bit.
And this movie wipes out all of the resistance, right?
Yeah.
Or at least the command. So then John Connor would naturally be the leader
afterwards. Yeah.
Because I like how it showed him, like, doing his speeches on this is John Connor. If you're listening to this, you are the resistance, right? I like that, because he has this, that's how he becomes his cult following, and that ties into kind of the alternate ideas for the ending, where like maybe people haven't, they don't know what he looks like,
yeah,
they
correct.
Haven't met him, but he's
they, like, all they hear is, yeah, all they have is like his recordings and his tapes, you know.
Yeah, so it's just this, he's this figure to people, like this inspires hope and all that, and he talks them out of doing the attack even. So.
Yeah, and if you're this general dude, like, you know, like who's like, you know, he's been a career military.
You're gonna be mad at this guy.
You're gonna be mad at this guy and hate this guy and not want to put up with his crap.
I will say that's Brandon. What did you think of this in the extended cut? If you can remember that, it's different, but I think like the one thing that sticks out to me of the extended cut is it's a brief moment, but it's when he holds the gun to John Connor's head.
I was just going to mention that. I'm like, why do you think about that part? Because here, so this is the situation. He's like, you don't need to know anything. Yes, I do. He holds a gun to his head and says, I don't believe in fate. I could kill you right now. Then they tell him all the information. And then Michael Ironside's like shaking his hand and being like, yeah, welcome to the team, buddy. Yeah, go do your thing. And I'm like, that whole scene is just really weird.
Spiraling out of control, isn't it?
Brandon, why do you hate Terminator?
That whole scene is... I don't. I just... See, and then the other thing that you guys are talking about is, I don't know, going into this movie, it feels weird to me that John Connor is like this secondary person in this. Because at the end of Terminator 3, he's like, look, I'm in the base. I'm John Connor. And people like immediately respond to him in those callback messages. Like, who are you? He's like, John Connor, leader of the resistance. And he like says that like at the end of T3, does he not?
He doesn't say leader of the resistance. He just says,
well,
oh, this
says something along those lines.
This is Connor. And they're like, can you help us? And that's all there is. But no, I.
Right.
Po-
so to
point
me,
taken,
them
Brent.
Saying
no, point
that
taken.
Is like they're bowing to him.
Yeah. He kind of is. Terminator 3 was smart. And we're like, all right, this is why he's in charge. But this was also interesting to see him not be in charge. Because remember what Kyle Reese said in the first one? Because he was like, we were losing and it was hopeless. And then John Connor showed up and then we won, you know? So there is ambiguity to all that. But no, I see your point because T3 set him up in the, you know, in the primary alpha presidential channel. They assumed that he was the guy and he knew about the Terminators. He knew what to do. So, and that is something else in the extended cut. There's just a brief thing. He mentions Sarah Connor, like when he's pleading to everyone at the end, like they locked up my mother and she was bright. So you need to listen to me now or something. Anyway, little moments like that. But hey, let's talk about another huge character in this. Kyle Reese, right? Anton Yelchin. Rest in peace, Anton. Tragically died well before his time, a few years ago, actually.
Yeah.
He was great as Kyle Reese in this.
He really was.
Like I believed this was the same character, and we'll get to it next time, Brandon, when we talk about Terminator Genesis. I never believed for a second that Jai Courtney was the same character as Michael Biehn, but I bought Anton Yelchin as a young Kyle Reese here, and I really like the journey they go on together in this movie.
Well, see, he put in the time to like really kind of study Michael and like his mannerisms and like in the way he moved and like the speed at which he did it, you know, because Biehn was kind of like wiry and like and everything he did was fast and he got those mannerisms down. Anton nailed them, and I love the energy that he brought to this. And you could see that this is a young version of what we see in Terminator.
He was fine. I don't know. I think he was okay. I mean, again, I don't know. I can't see him as a young Michael Biehn, but I mean, there's nothing wrong with his performance.
In the same way, again, like, you know, obviously he played Chekhov in the Star Trek 09 movies, but in the same way I can look at the majority of those characters and see the same characters in the original series, I can look at this Kyle Reese and see the same Kyle Reese from the original Terminator in a way that I can't in some other interpretations. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, I don't know. To me, all the casting is like odd. I mean, like...
Well, we wanted someone that wasn't too pretty.
I'm just a negative Nancy.
Because that would be unreal. No, you know, I understand what that person was saying, though, because to a point, you have to be like, what's the hygiene like of these people? You know, and it's the post-apocalypse, and I don't know. But
apparently, I did notice when I was watching tonight, like, those people have got some seriously white teeth for living in an apocalypse.
Yeah.
Right? Like, well,
maybe they found a toothpaste factory, and that's what they've been operating out of, Brandon. You don't know.
Yeah,
so,
bleach.
But,
I don't know.
But no,
let's talk about the machines. Let's talk about the machines.
The machines? It's about the humans.
Yeah.
You know what separates us from them? Is we bury our dead.
What a terrible line.
That was a stupid line. But hey, here's a great line. Come with me if you want to live. They worked it in.
Can I tell you something? There's a deleted scene that makes that line better.
Tell me.
So after Sam Worthington's character gives up his heart to save Connor, Anton Yelchin, Kyle Reese, buries Sam Worthington.
Oh, really? Okay.
In a
deleted
scene.
No one's coming
scene,
to bury
yeah.
you. Oh, I see. That
right.
makes sense.
So
why,
at
why
the
are
end,
these
when
great deleted
like,
scenes not in the director's cut?
That one should be, because that one actually then brings that line to not be a stupid line, right? Because right now it's just a stupid line. But at the end, when he's like, he buries him, right? He believes he's human. He believes he's worth burying.
Well,
right? Like,
it, you know, and that reminds me of another, like two lines that were funny together when he's pointing the gun at Marcus and Marcus takes the gun from him. He's like, you point that gun at someone, you better be ready to shoot. And then when they those other guys point the gun at him, he says it. Kyle Reese says it to the guys pointing the gun at him, and Marcus kind of gives him a side eye like, oh man, what are you doing? Like,
uh-huh.
Now's not the time for that. So, but you want to talk about the machine some more, Brandon? Go ahead.
So anyways, what you were just saying, though, some of the dialogue is just not too hot for me in it. But I really like the machines in this. I love the special effects. I love the addition of the Moto Terminators.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I have a question about that.
Okay.
So why would Skynet build essentially a motorcycle
with a USB input?
Well, not only that, but like a machine that humans could like just easily ride like a regular thing. Like, shouldn't they have made things like not compatible for humans? You think?
I don't know. I never thought about that. Like, to me, it's just like it's a way for them to chase humans on the road.
It's an efficient. Right?
Because the thing that they were attached to was that giant monster machine.
I think the production crew just like motorcycles.
It could be.
Well, we
wanted
to show
I don't know.
John
I liked
Connor
it. I thought that was
a playing Guns N' Roses. Like, yeah. Terminator 2.
I think that's what it was about.
Well, okay. I did not like the Transformer Terminator, to be honest. Like, I was cool
okay,
with
all
the other designs. I like the motorcycles didn't bother me. I really like the Hydro Terminators, the worm Terminators.
Oh, the
in
eels.
The water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. That was real cool.
Those are cool. I like
that.
Those.
All that fit into me with like what I had assumed and put in my head about Skynet. But the giant Transformer, it kind of stuck out to me as not being
much.
From Terminator.
Yeah. So what's odd about that is the size of it.
It's
right,
huge.
Like I, it is cool, but it doesn't feel believable that they would build something that big.
Yeah,
right. It doesn't really make any sense. Like, but
then
the
Japanese
if you look at
branch
it, like,
of Skynet created the giant robot
under the Bandai
those hunter
Corp.
killers are big, right?
Yeah,
like
the
hunter
killers
are really big as well. So I guess it's okay that they would, but to build a big airplane is more believable than building this big giant walking machine. So I like the sequence because it's pretty exciting. And it leads to the Moto Terminator sequence, which is also really exciting. But that whole sequence and the way the special effects were done with it, like the ball knocking the motorcycle over, and then how it ends up knocking that hunter killer out and almost pulling them off the bridge. Like, it's a really exciting sequence. And I think it's as good as the one from T3, which I loved so much with the big
crane. Your favorite action sequence in any film is the crane.
No, like, yeah. So I really like that. I like those things a lot. And I was really impressed with what they did. The T-600s, like we did touch on them briefly, but even the sound design of these machines in this era and this like digital communication that they have really worked for me and really added a layer of believability to these machines for me.
That's true. That's interesting. Speaking of sound, though, so the composer for
Danny Elfman.
Danny Elfman.
Elfman.
This is
yeah.
not a Danny Elfman.
This is
score
not a Danny
all,
Elfman score,
which is crazy. It's like, oh, you have another gear, like you have another mode. This is kind of interesting.
Well, he kind of inverted the Terminator theme, right?
Yeah. And it's just like it's interesting to see him kind of go off brand like with his compositional style, because if you didn't look up that who the composer was for this movie, or if you didn't pay attention to the opening credits, you know, like you wouldn't believe that this is a Danny Elfman movie, because like Danny Elfman's all of his scores are very, very distinct. His style, his style is very, very distinctive as a composer. Mm-hmm. He writes very much the same way, and you know, a lot of most composers have their own signature, and you could tell that it's their work when they're doing it, and he's definitely no exception. So it's very impressive that he was able to kind of like to evolve his style a little bit and make it fit something like this and kind of expand it and do something different, which is pretty neat.
See, I would have thought it was Brad Fidel again, because you got those clangs, you know, and like I noticed it a couple of times with Marcus, but there was like kind of that acoustic guitar sound that you heard in Terminator 2. And like I noticed it when he was like he saw the reflector on the road.
Yeah, well, see, Marcus has like
it's
he
like
had
a Western.
Yeah, thing. he had like an orchestral theme, but then but it also on the acoustic guitar also. Well, and that's the one you're thinking about, and so that's interesting. It's the same melody, but just done a little bit differently.
Well, you know, we never really talked about the music in the Terminators, right? I mean, Brad Fidel, right, it was all electronic. It was great.
Yeah.
In the first two, then Marco Beltrami comes in for Terminator 3. Very lame. I can't even. There was like no themes. Again, talking about the continuity of like just the franchise, it's all lost there. Mm-hmm. The only time you hear the Terminator theme is that they have an orchestral version of it at the credits. Like, just odd there, you know? And I felt like this was, even though we didn't hear like the same exact Brad Fidel, bow, 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 that kind of stuff, this felt like in the same family. Much like, you know, the Klingon music in Star Trek all feels like the same family, like Jerry Goldsmith or James Horner or whoever's making it. You know, it seems the same. This feels like in the same family of music from the first two. So,
So yeah, again, that's like I'm impressed by Elfman's his skills there. You know, because normally he just kind of makes things his own, but this time he made it fit into what came before, the good ones at least.
Mm-hmm. Elfman's a great composer, but some of his music is like kind of tough to listen to sometimes. Like he does really good job at main titles. Like his main title track for the 2001 Planet of the Apes is just outstanding. And honestly, one of my favorite main title sequences in a movie is the Charlie and the Chocolate Factory movie that he did with Tim Burton.
I saw love the that remake. Main title.
Oh man, I love that movie so much. I think it's fantastic myself. But his main title sequence in that is really, 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 really cool. So, yeah, it's good music, and I liked the callbacks to T2 that we heard in the music for this one. I think they did a really good job in this one. I heard them in T3 as well. Like, and I kind of noticed the Beltrami. I thought he did a good job. I mean, I couldn't tell you any themes of it either, but the music worked for me in the movie. So, excellent, right on. Well, is there any other topics you guys want to talk about that we haven't addressed yet, Lance? Anything we haven't hit?
Now we got all the things I wanted to talk about.
Zach, anything for you?
No, I mean, we covered a lot of ground there, and I just I think this is a real, just a great action movie, and then also a worthy successor in the Terminator franchise, and ultimately I'm just disappointed it didn't connect the way that I think everyone was hoping it would. For whatever reason, you know, many factors at play here, just didn't connect with general audiences, and I wish they just would have stuck with this and not hit the reset button so soon. Because they had planned the trilogy, just see it through, people. It made money, just not enough, I guess.
Yeah, that's crazy. I would like to have seen a sequel to this one here, because I did enjoy this a lot. Like I said, the only thing I didn't like is Christian Bale, really. everything else is like, it didn't really bother me that much. But I don't know, I like this movie quite a bit. So should we do the Terminator impersonators first?
Yeah, so I had a question for you guys then, because for this particular category, Terminator impersonator, right? Mm-hmm. Do we count Skynet's avatar as Helena Bonham Carter at the end?
I would say no.
Okay, all right, I agree.
I was gonna say, do we count Sam Worthington as well? But I would say no. There
he is
as well.
Himself. He's not, can't impersonate yourself.
Yeah,
can't be done.
I would say no to Helena Bonham Carter, though.
Well, with that in mind, then, we only have one Terminator impersonator in this movie.
Hey, we're supposed to guess. I knew that. So
we only have one Terminator impersonator in this movie. It's the T-800. It's when it's calling for John at the end. It's like, help, you know. And that was cool. And we still didn't like see like the mouth moving and stuff like that. So that's interesting to think about, like the endoskeleton talking like that. But that's what it's doing. And you forget, the whole movie, you're not even thinking about that because we had seen Kyle before that, right? I'm just saying it's a very effective, you know, bait and switch, because we'd seen Kyle before that, and then Catherine Bruce is like, oh, come with me. And you don't
live?
You come if you want to live. And you don't see, you know, Kyle again until you hear that. And you're like, oh, no, they're in trouble. So it was a very effective for John and for the audience, I think. So so only one for Terminator Salvation. So that brings our grand total of Terminator impersonators to 9 in the franchise. So.
Now, do you want to do ratings next?
Yes, let's do ratings. So, Lance, you're our guest. I'll ask you, out of 5 time displacement units, how many would you give Terminator Salvation?
Can we give halves too?
Yes.
I'll give it 3.5.
3.5, okay. What is the weakest part of the movie?
I think...
Because we know what Brandon's is. He hates Christian Bale. That's been well established. So.
Yes. I think it's Skynet's plan, and like the end where like with all the exposition, it's like, oh no, this was our doing all along. It's like, no, I'm not so sure. And then like they had multiple chances to kill, you know, Kyle and John, and it's just like you could have won this war at any point in time in this movie, and you didn't. That's kind of thing where it kind of falters for me.
Yeah, as for me, I'm gonna give it 4 out of 5 time displacement units. I agree on the weakest part. I think it is the plan, and then the exposition of the plan at the end was like,
it's a little much.
Every Bond villain, like, we're gonna tell you our plans, you can stop us,
but sly dog, you got me monologue.
Incredibles. So to me, though, as I said at the beginning, this was a fresh adventure in the Terminator universe. You know, it wasn't reliant on the same formula that every single other film has had. Even looks like Dark Fate's the same. Like, oh, I'm here to save you. I'm here to fight the bad Terminator. And yes, like the climax of this movie became that, but the setup was completely different, and we got to those endings in different ways. And it's a really interesting mythology out there. I do believe that there is life and interest to the Terminator franchise beyond just Arnold. And unfortunately, they reached out with this movie, and it didn't hit the way people wanted to, and it didn't succeed. So they're like, oh, well, I guess we got to have Arnold back, because, you know, they've done two movies since, both have featured Arnold. And so it's like Arnold or bust, apparently, in the Terminator franchise, as far as, you know, the people making the movies are concerned. But I like the expansion of the universe, seeing the future war. I've always wanted a future war movie. We got it with this one. So I'm giving it 4 out of 5. What about you, Brendan?
Yeah, I think I said it earlier at the beginning there, 4 out of 5 for me as well. I like this movie a lot. I'm having a tough time deciding whether or not I like T3 or this one more. I'll have to decide that when I do my ratings, because I really like T3, and I think T3 is a lot more fun than this. But I like this one a lot. Like, they're very, very different movies, and that's why I'd have trouble ranking them. But I like this one a lot, and I don't understand why people don't like this movie. Like, I posted online, I'm like, I don't like Christian Bale in this movie. I think he's a good Batman,
no!
but not a good John Connor.
No! No!
Yeah. And then somebody responded, he's like, yeah, Terminator Salvation's terrible. And I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. I think it's just fine. So, I don't know. I like this movie a lot. I'd rather be the guy that likes Terminator 3 and Terminator Salvation than the guy that hates both.
You might be the only one, Brandon, but yeah. Good for you. That's why we love you.
I'm happy to be that guy.
It's time for the question, is this franchise fatigue? So, Lance, I ask you, is it?
Whoo. I'd say yeah.
So, after this movie, you don't want to see any more Terminators, is what you're saying.
You wouldn't have wanted to see the trilogy. Based on this movie, you wouldn't have wanted to see that trilogy?
Correct. I mean, didn't you see the ending? Like, they won, didn't they?
Look, didn't you hear the monologue? Skynet has a network across the world. You think this is more finality?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, I see. Okay,
I do. That's
so you don't think there's much more to mine from this feature, is what you're saying?
I mean, in different aspects, yeah. But like after you know, the point that they show us, I don't think so.
Okay, all right. Well, fair enough for me. I would say absolutely not, because I think, obviously, the end, you know, sets up the sequel. There's a Skynet network across the world, and the battle will continue. There's no fate but what we make. This is John Connor, right? So it's setting up more movies.
It's trying to, but I think it's stretching.
Well, but see, that's not the system core that they blew up. There's 11 more years to get in the war. I want to see purple lasers. I want to see that. I want to see the time displacement equipment. I want to see them send the people back in time. You know, like if this movie was a little different and had that at the end, then obviously there wouldn't be a need for any more. But the way I see it, this was setting up new adventures in the future war, and we'd eventually wrap back around to the end we know has to happen, which is sending the Terminators back and the Protectors back in time. So that's definitely, at this point, I was like, oh, this is great. Terminator's back. I didn't like T3, but I love T4, and I'm glad we've kind of moved into the future. And then they hit the reset button, so I'm very, very disappointed. So what about you, Brandon?
I would say that, no, I don't think that this is fatigued yet. I think that there's 11 more years and there's a lot of ground that they could cover in there. So, yeah, I think that they should definitely keep doing these movies.
Well, they will.
Yeah.
Good. Oh, that's good news. Yeah, we should talk about it when the next one comes out.
We should do that. So, Lance, well, when you're not signing your body over to science, when you're on death row, where can people find you online?
They can find me on Twitter at Sir Lance Laster.
All right. What about you, Brandon?
You can find me on Twitter at Brandon Metella. You can find me on the Trek FM network with a show called The Line, which is all about Star Trek Picard. I do that show with my friends Justin and Chrissy. And then over on the Fandom Podcast Network, as well as in our own independent feed, I have a monthly podcast called Good Evening, an Alfred Hitchcock podcast, where my friends Chris and Tom and I, we cover a Hitchcock film every single month. And the next episode that we're going to have come out here, I might have just come out actually here in October, is Rebecca. So the Academy Award winner for Best Picture in 1940. So that's definitely a good discussion you don't want to miss. We had a lot of fun. Zach, where can people find you when you're not selling your soul for a kiss?
Well, you can find me personally on Twitter at MoronZach. That's MoronZach. I'm also the host of my own podcast, Always Holding a Smallville. We talk about each and every episode of that Young Superman show over there. You can find us on Twitter at Always Smallville with one S. I'm also host of Trek FM's Standard Orbit, an original series podcast. We talk about all things Captain Kirk and the Enterprise, and you can find us on Twitter at Trek FM.
At this time, we'd like to thank our wonderful executive producers of the network, Tony Robinson and Ken Tripp. We can't do it without them. We would also like to thank Zach Tripp, who created our wonderful theme music. And if you want to find the network on Twitter, it's at UFP Earth. You can send us an email, contact@UFP.Earth. And yeah, we're on Facebook as well, so be sure to check us out. And we have a new show on the network as well that has a couple of episodes launched called Mickey's Marvels. Patrick and Chris go through many different aspects of Disney films. They've had episodes on Fantasia and WALL-E and other stuff like that. So definitely check it out. But that's all we've got for you. Until next time, when we cover Terminator Genis Yosius, we'll be back.
Genesis!
This has been a production of MTMR Media Works.
Genesis! Genesis allowed as not! Genesis is sequel forbidden!
I wish.